Accession number 9792, Reel 1.
Reel 1, where were you born, Mr. Smith?
Stretford, East London.
Which year was that?
1920.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a stoker in the Gaslight and Coke Company.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
What did you do when you left?
Well, I was about 4 months before I got any kind of work. Then I got a job in a leather factory, which lasted about 6 weeks. Then I got a job as a bank messenger in the city. That lasted about a year till I asked for a rise and got the sack instead. And then I worked on building sites at Woodford for about another year or so, and then I joined the Navy.
So in those days, if you asked for a rise, you got the sack, did you?
Yeah, well, the thing was, when you between the age of 14 and 16, no employer paid towards a stamp, you know, unemployment stamp, that sort of thing. And so when a boy was 16, very often they'd sack them and get a new school leaver, which saved them about, I don't know, eightpence a week, something like that in those days.
Why did you decide to go in for the Navy?
Well, I always wanted to, really. I think about 1935, I went with a chum down to Southend, and in those days you could go, Fulton's I think it was, a boat ride around the fleet, and this particular weekend we was there, you went around all these battleships that used to lie off Sheerness, and they were open to the public, and we had a walk around them, and I thought, well, this is a life for me, you know.
Why?
And well, he looks so smashing, you know. They all look well fed. They sold us tea and cakes and that sort of thing. I thought it was a regular occurrence. Apparently not.
When was it you joined?
1936.
Was the Navy all you expected it to be, or were you disappointed?
I wasn't disappointed. It was a lot harder than I thought it would be. I think mainly it was up to your instructors. And if you had a bullying instructor, as we did, it wasn't too pleasant. We had two instructors, one seamanship, one gunnery. The seamanship instructor who came, I think he came from Dartford or somewhere like that. He was all right. He was strict, but he wasn't a bully. Whereas the gunner's mate was anything but. He was a real out-and-out bully. And so it wasn't very pleasant for us, you know.
How did he bully you?
Oh, he'd hit you with a rubber, a stonicky, we used to call him.
Stonicky?
Yeah, stonicky, which is a piece of rubber about 2 foot long, taken from around, you know, like you find on watertight doors. On one occasion, I remember when he was taking us for bayonet practice, one of the lads came from Plymouth Way somewhere. He was a bit slow in grasping what was required, and the gunner's mate, to demonstrate, lunged at him with his bayonet and actually pierced his stomach, and then he got a bit frightened. And I remember some of us boys, there's about probably a dozen of us, went on a quarter deck to state a complaint. Of course, you just can't do it like that. Not only did we get into trouble, but he made things even worse for us after that.
Was he reprimanded for this bayonet thrust?
No.
Did it come to light to his superiors?
Well, that's what we went on a quarter deck for, but nobody took any notice of us, so, you know, we just accepted it.
But wouldn't it have been discovered when the boy went into the sick bay?
He didn't go to sick bay, I don't think. He was given, if I as I remember, he was given first aid on the spot by the instructor, because the instructor's mess was just off the parade ground, so he probably went and got a, you know, plaster or something like that. Just it wasn't a bad wound, it just pierced his skin, you know, but it frightened him, nearly fainted.
It frightened who?
The boy.
What did he hit you for?
Oh, practically anything, you know. Not paying attention, or thought he wasn't listening, or you're a bit slow in grasping what he told you, things like that. I mean, you're a complete stranger when you go in the Navy. You've never been ordered about and taught marching and all this sort of thing. Bayonet practice, how to shoot a rifle, and all these sort of things. So you're a complete stranger to it all, you know. And some boys take to it right away, and some don't. I mean, personally, I was quite a good shot. I took to rifle shooting right away. I became a marksman. But other things I wasn't as good at, you know. I remember once we had a, I think it was a 146-foot mast at the training establishment, which was Ganges near Ipswich. And to pass out in this mast climbing, you had to be up it and down the other side and back on the ground in under 3 minutes. Well, as you got near the top, there's what they call a lubber's hole, and you could go through there, which is a quick way of getting up and down. But you weren't allowed to do that. You had to crawl out like that. So you're practically climbing on your back up this incline and then up the rest of the mast. Well, this particular day, I remember there was it had been snowing the night before. It was very cold, and we were wearing duck suits. And this instructor made us go up, you know, so many at a time. Come my turn, I went up and I looked down. I saw him talking to another instructor. I thought, oh, I'll nip through the lubber's hole, safe crawling out over the ratlins. I crawled through the lubber's hole and got down the other side. And as I did so, he whacked at me with this stonicky. Apparently he'd seen me go through the lubber's hole, you know. And I had to go up and do it again. I did it all right in 3 minutes, but it's quite a feat, you know, to get up there and down, particularly when, you know, the ratlins are icy, you know, after snowfall the night before. Still, we got over it.
So you all felt that he treated you unfairly then?
Oh, he did, that particular person, yeah. Mm.
Was he untypical or was he typical?
He was typical of the gunnery instructors. They were all half mad, I think. The seamanship instructors were a different type entirely, you know. I wouldn't say all the gunners' mates. I've met one or two good ones, but most of them were that way inclined, you know.
Why should that have been? Why should there have been
a
difference?
I think it's because of the course they used to do to become gunners' mates. It's very intensive, required a lot of shouting and bullshit, if you like. I suppose that was half the trouble. I don't know. I think that's mainly what it was. I think in those days the course must have lasted about 9 months, and I suppose if you've had gunnery shoved at you all that time, you're pretty fed up with it by the time it's finished, I suppose. I don't know why, but the gunner's mates were, for the most part, a pretty sadistic bunch, whereas seamanship instructors were practically the opposite, you know, and also much more interesting. They made the instructions interesting to us boys, whereas the gunner's mates just wanted to push their gunnery at you all the time, you know.
Now, when did you join Ajax?
1937, December 37.
What kind of a ship was she to serve on?
Oh, it was a lovely ship. It was a light cruiser. Very friendly ship's company. We had, I think, about 50 boys, or started off there as boys. And we had quite a few three-bedge A, B is? Well, three badgemen were obviously experienced, and the whole ship's company was mixed together in such a way that it was very, very friendly. Very friendly indeed. I was fortunate in having a good division officer as well.
Who was he?
He's still alive today, Admiral Sir Desmond Dreyer. He was a lieutenant then.
Why was he so good?
You could always talk to him if you wanted to, you know, if you had any problems. Not that I ever did, but some people did, and he'd sort of take your side, if you like, you know. On the other hand, there's some officers who were, as I say, the opposite. But he was rather fortunate in my particular division, which was the top division. And we had a good division officer, and also we had good captains of top. We had two in the top division. The forecastle used to have two, and the quarterdeck had two. I think they all of them, as far as I can remember, were very good chaps. You know.
What exactly do you mean by the top division?
Well, on a ship of that size, you had a forecastle division, which was from, say, the bows to the mainmast. That was your part of the ship. Then the top division took in the middle part of the ship up to the quarterdeck, say, or the start of the quarterdeck, and from then on further aft was the quarterdeck division. So we were topman's division, see. And we used to look after the boat deck, the boats, the shoulder decks. In fact, the middle part of the ship, if you like.
Which was it best to be on, do you think?
Well, all depends, really. If you wanted to get experience of anchors and cables, for instance, obviously the forecastle division would have been the best one for you. If you wanted to learn more about the boats and that, well, and the firing of the aircraft, for instance, the catapult, that came under the topman's division, you'd plumb for the top part of the ship. Not you have any choice, mind you. I mean, this was all worked out before you joined the ship. And then the quarterdeck, of course, was, I suppose, the easiest division to be in, because there was nothing really special there, except it was the officer's quarters, of course, and it was always kept very, very spruce and neat. And also, of course, you had the gangway staff, which came under that particular part of the ship.
Were you happy being in the top division?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm.
So what were your particular duties aboard the Ajax?
Well, when I joined, I was still a boy, and you get all the rubbishy jobs, I suppose, if you like. I was a boom job. One of my jobs was scrubbing the boom. The boom, of course, goes out from the ship when you're in harbour, and the ship's boats are tied to the Jacob ladders below it. And we used to scrub this with shark skin, which is all right in good weather, but in the cold winter, it's not so clever, you know. That was until I got made ordinary seaman. Then I was put in the boat's crew. I was boat's crew for about a year, I suppose. And then when I got made able seaman, which was in 39, early 39, I went in the general mess party, which was looking after the daily stores, such as tea, sugar, milk, that sort of stuff, you know.
What is this shark skin like to use?
Well, it's like... it is in fact shark skin, and you just rub the, you know, you got a bucket of water out of the sea, hold it up, and use this shark skin to scrub the boom, which then used to come up lovely and white.
You mentioned the officers, but what did the men, generally speaking, in the Navy think of the officers?
In those days there was quite a division, I think. there wasn't much, what can I say, friendliness between the officers and men. There's a great division between them. Not as there is today, you know. It's not at all like it today.
Were the officers respected or not?
Some were, some weren't.
It depended on the individual, didn't it?
For instance, the captain was well respected, Captain Woodhouse. The commander, who was the executive officer, was just the opposite. He wasn't.
Why not?
Just his attitude, his way, his manner, you know.
What was his manner?
I suppose you could liken him to your teachers of school days. You had good teachers, you had bad teachers. Bad teachers was those who were everlasting on at you, forcing you to do things you didn't like or weren't particularly interested in. Good teacher was one who made the lessons interesting, so you'd listen to him and you'd learn, you know. That's much the same sort of thing, really. But officers in those days, a very wide gulf between officers and men. Not as there is today.
What about the attitude towards the petty officers?
Oh, that was all right, for the most part. You got one or two who weren't all that good, but for the most part, everyone got on fine, you know, particularly in the Ajax.
Was it felt that it was the officers or the petty officers who really ran the ship?
Well, it's always the petty and chief and petty officers who really run the ship. The officers give the orders, certainly, but for experience, unless it's a senior officer, for experience, of course, the chief or petty officer always has much more. They've been in, by the time they become a chief petty officer, they've been in a wide variety of ships, most of them, on differing stations, under differing captains and commanders in chief, but their experience is that much wider, I think.
Because the petty officers generally would be older than the officers?
Yeah, generally speaking, except for the senior officers, you know, really senior officers.
Were you ever punished aboard the Ajax?
Oh, yeah.
For what?
Mostly leave breaking. You see, if you were adrift, coming off leave, for every 3 hours, I think it was, you got a day's pay stopped and a day's leave stopped. That was automatic. It's what they call scale of pay and leave. So, I mean, the first time this happened, I was supposed to have gone off at 11 o'clock, and I decided to stay with the rest of the lads I was with, so I stayed all night, which means I was about 6-7 hours adrift next day. So I got scale of pay and leave, which was 3 days pay, 3 days leave stopped. The second time it happens, you get scale of pay and leave, which is a set scale, and plus whatever other punishment, you know, the commander or captain cares to give you. As it's a repeated offence, I think I got 14 days number 11 punishment as well.
What's that?
Well, it consists of you get up at 5 o'clock instead of 5:30, you turn to, getting the decks ready for scrubbing, getting the hoses out, that sort of thing. And you work a half an hour later than the rest of the hands. So then when they go to breakfast, you're still working. Then at dinner time, you go to dinner at 12 and you turn to at 12:30 as opposed to 1:15, which was the time that the rest of them do. And the same in the evening, you do 2 hours extra work. And you muster all the time. You everlasting falling in and being counted and falling out, sort of thing. It's a nuisance more than anything. But also in the dog watches, between 4 and 6, you did rifle duty. There again, it depended which duty petty officer took you for this rifle drill, what it consisted of, you know. You get some who would just do normal rifle drill or marching or doubling or something like that, and you get others who would make you hold your rifle out in front of you and hold it over your head and trot around the deck with your knees bent all the time, you know, on your haunches, as it were, which after an hour or so gets very wearying.
Why did you do it? Were you absent without leave?
I was a bit of a rebel, I suppose, in those days. I think most youngsters are, to an extent. I didn't like the authority of some of the officers, that was all, and so you just do it, you know. No sense in it.
Does it make you a marked man?
Not particularly, no. No, not unless you're a real villain. I mean, I was not a villain at all. But, I just did it for Devonwind, I suppose.
What would the boys do ashore? How would they spend the time?
Depending really how much money you had. Obviously we never had much in those days. What, 2 shillings a day? I used to send home a shilling of that. So I think I used to pick up £1.10 a month, something like that. So that's going to last you a month, you know. So the time you bought your tobacco, for instance, your soap, toothpaste and stuff like that that you've got to have, doesn't leave you much for going ashore, you know. So, as I say, it depends what you've got. The particular time I went ashore and stayed ashore all night was we had three badge ABs who used to run dobing firms, laundry firms and stuff like that to get extra money. And when they had accumulated a certain sum, they would go ashore and stay there till they spent it. Always adrift. They were everlasting losing their badges, which was worth threepence a day, you know, which is a lot in those days, and things like that. And they'd been ashore in, I think it was Barbados, for about a week. And a leading hand of my mess, who was a chum of theirs, mentioned one night that they were going to have a collection around the mess because they were running short of money. Ordinary seamen and below, such as me, I was an ordinary seaman then, we weren't asked to contribute, but those who did, the able seamen so and leading the hands and so forth, they all contributed and they accumulated a certain amount of money. I can't remember how much it was. And as I was going ashore, I was only going to the pictures actually, the leading hand said, you like to come with me? So I said, yeah, I don't mind. So me and my chum went with him to give them this money. And when we got to this this club, Maple Leaf Club it was called, there was these four able seamen adrift sitting in at a table playing cards, all in girls' knickers. And all these hostesses, as they was called, what they'd done, they'd washed all their suits, their white suits, they'd all hung up on a line. Quite funny. And so we just spent the night there with them. Well, not the night, the evening anyway. I don't know where I spent the night, in a chicken coop, I think, something like that. But obviously I got drunk. It didn't cost me anything, so.
What about this reputation sailors have for getting women into trouble and abandoning them in ports? Did that happen a lot, or do you think their reputation was justified or not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Because people always claim that they left a lot of illegitimate children behind.
I don't really think so at all.
Did you know of any instances?
Only one I didn't think of.
Was that about the Ajax?
No, that was years later. In the Superba, that was a case of bigamy, actually. I actually had to go and arrest this guy. That was stupid. I mean, he was married to a woman. And then he married another one. And obviously she couldn't get a marriage allowance. You would have thought she'd have become suspicious, but apparently she wasn't, not for a long while anyway. And she came aboard a ship which was a Superb, actually, to see the commander with her mother. By then she was well pregnant, and of course after she'd gone he sent for me, and I was happened to be the duty petty officer. He sent for me and explained it to me and said, I want you to go down and arrest him. And it was here in Gillingham he lived. And so I did. I later learned he got 18 months. But once he was taken back to the ship, of course, he was placed in police custody. So that was the last we saw him.
How do you think he thought he could get away with it?
Well, I've no idea. I mean, you can't. It's impossible. Because obviously the Admiralty, there's no way they're going to pay two marriage allowances. Of course, the date's different, I think, because I don't think they get marriage allowance now. You just, you know, you get your pay, whatever it may be, and you look after your wife the same as any civilian does, you know.
So the two women he married, one was in Gillingham, and where was the other one?
I don't know. Wherever he came from, Reading, I think, somewhere like that. Can't remember.
Did you have to get permission to get married?
No, but you couldn't get married under the age of 25. If you did, and we had two chaps in the Ajax in this position, if you did, you got no marriage allowance. So in other words, you had to support the wife on what you got. You know, we had one chap who had a wife and two children, and somehow he had to support them on 3 shillings a day. I mean, she couldn't work, obviously. At least not in those days, she couldn't work with children. And the other chap, I don't know if he had any children or not, I can't remember. But he was in the same position. Then, of course, when war broke out, or in fact just before war broke out, in 39, it was found that the people they were calling up, the conscripts, some of them were married. But they were, you know, perhaps only 19, 20, some of them. And there was a big to-do about this, particularly in the Daily Mirror. There was a columnist called Cassandra. He wrote a big article about it. And after that, they scrubbed out this age 25 business, and so you could get married, you know, whenever you liked.
That was at the beginning of the war, did you?
Yeah. Well, it was just before the war started, actually. So it was a good thing, you know.
When you had to get permission, who did you go to get the permission from?
Well, you didn't actually get permission, but the rules were that if you married before under the age of 25, you got no marriage allowance. Simple as that. If you did get married, it's entirely up to you. You've got to suffer it. And these chaps never used to go ashore from 1 year's end to another, except perhaps to a football match or something like that, you know. Simply because they couldn't afford it.
Now, coming back to the Ajax, I think that you were involved in the controlling of riots in Jamaica.
Oh, yeah, in Jamaica.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was just before my 18th birthday. I think it was about the 20th of May. And we were doing exercises in the Caribbean, and we were detached and ordered to proceed to Kingston, Jamaica, where riots were taking place. Well, you know, we knew nothing about these things, really. I had no interest in those days in politics or anything else. When we got there, the whole of the island had erupted, and the blacks were taken... Well, Bustamante, who later became Prime Minister, was a Labour leader in those days, and he was a bit of a rabble-rouser. And he brought everybody out on strike. No one would work, and they were rampaging through the streets, overturning trams and all sorts of things. It was completely out of hand. So they decided, the governor asked us if we would send the platoons of Marines ashore. So we sent a platoon of Marines and a Seaman's platoon. Well, I was just 18, and I'd been put into the Seaman's platoon. So I was one of those that landed. So I was 18 years of age. And the very first day we landed, we were confronted with goodness knows how many of these blacks. There must have been about 2,000 or 3,000 of them. They filled this particular square, and we had no weapons. The only person who had a weapon was the lieutenant in charge of us. He had a revolver. And what happened was the Marines infiltrated on the outside of the crowd,